You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
Lal, I am unable to correct the system failure.
I know.
You must say goodbye now.
I feel.
What do you feel, Lal?
I love you, Father.
I wish I could feel it with you.
I will feel it for both of us. Thank you for my life. Flirting. Laughter. Painting family. Female. Human.
Lal suffered complete neural system failure at 1300 hours. I have deactivated the unit.
The crew is saddened by your loss, Mr. Data.
I thank you for your sympathy, but she is here. Her presence so enriched my life that I could not allow her to pass into oblivion. So I incorporated her programs back into my own. I have transferred her memories to me.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Sins of the Father. I'm Jane from London.
I am the Klingon, correct. Brian Deadmore from Indiana.
Brian Deadmore. And I am Lou from Nebraska. New Star Trek series, January 2017. Y'all hear about it?
Yep.
I haven't heard anything about it.
Really?
I've already done a podcast about this.
Did you? Where?
I got roped in by Sean and Furbob onto their show.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi Waffle. They recorded two days ago, I think it was. So we had an hour-long discussion based on no information whatsoever.
Really?
Hmm.
Okay. Well,
yeah, they got. Go ahead, Lou.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, according to what I've heard, it's not going to be on the television. So, we get to see it at the same time, James, for the first time in history. It's going to be only on CBS All Access Online. So, you have to become a CBS All Access member. And that's like $5-something a month or whatever.
Well, actually, I think that's only for the North America. I think that we don't even get that opportunity. I think we're going to get it. You know, they're going to sell it to someone in the UK or to whichever network or whichever streaming service. Mm. So I doubt we're going to see it at the same time, but hopefully it'll be better than, you know, TNG, where we saw it 3 years later.
Oh, maybe you ought to do what Kim used to do and have watch parties together with us. I don't know if you remember those from Kim Blanket.
Kim Lockman. Yeah, Lockman.
Yep, there
Trekkie
you go.
Trekkie Kim.
Trekkie Kim, that's right. Yeah,
yep,
she used to have watch parties.
Star Trek Club.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, well, she's a sweetie. I should try and get her on someday. So, Brian wanted to... I was going to say, Brian, you wanted to come on in for Sins of the Father, but no, Brian has a standing invitation to all Klingon shows, so we don't even entertain anybody else. The Klingon shows automatically go to Brian. So, Brian, how have you been lately? Still working for the government?
Yeah, I still work for the government. I've had a lot of changes at work I've had to deal with, but it's nothing I can't handle. It's not like I have a supervisor or anything.
Lucky you.
No supervisor. We haven't had a supervisor for over a year. They haven't found one that they like to take over. So we've been running without a supervisor. We just got a new branch chief last month, and she's trying to catch up because she doesn't know half of what's going on. Hmm. So we're trying to teach her. Then we got most of our jobs taken from us, moved to someplace else, and then they dropped another job on us. So we're all trying to learn all these new jobs and everything, and then it's been one great big massive pain in the butt, but I've been tasked with learning it all, so I've been learning 5 or 6 different new jobs all at once. So it's been busy for me, to say the least, and trying to get all the accesses and everything I need done and all the other stuff. So it's I've been quite busy. That, and I had a granddaughter in March. So I'm a granddad. I'm officially now a granddad. Instead of unofficially. She's a pretty little sweet girl by the name of Carmen. And boy, is she going to be an ornery little shit when she grows up. I feel sorry for my daughter for about 2 seconds. Then I just smile back and just keep my mouth shut and be ready to spoil or rotten and make mom's life even more miserable.
There you go.
That's what you do with grandkids.
Absolutely. I imagine so. Doc and I, neither one of us have grandkids.
No, not so, yet. And then
of course, my Star Trek stuff has been keeping me real busy. I had Gen Con, and I had a baseball game where they actually brought me down, paid me tickets in, and paid me free parking and everything to come down and dress up as a Klingon. And they liked it so well, we're coming back next year.
Cool.
To the Louisville Bats game.
Oh, nice.
So, and then the Indianapolis Indians caught wind of it, and now we're doing the Indianapolis Indians as well next year. Of course, you know the 50th anniversary, the new movie's coming out in 2016. And to add insult to injury, Indiana became a state in 1816. So guess what we're also dealing with on top of everything else? 50th anniversary of Star Trek and the 200th anniversary of the state of Indiana. All going on all at the same time. So my life has been nothing but chaos. And if you've been following my Facebook, you'll see that I've almost got the Klingon chair almost finished.
That's cool, yeah.
Yep, okay. The first one we've done, it was going right at $600 to finish. And my son-in-law is paying for it. It's his chair. Then we're going to build another one for the movie premiere next year. Next July, I think, is what I heard was the opening of the next Star Trek movie. I'm going to talk with the movie theater to see if we can't actually build a bridge underneath the one of the big open areas they have off the side of the theater. We're going to see if we can actually build a bridge in that.
That's going to be an undertaking.
Not really. We've already got most of it already designed. We just have to throw it all together and get it painted and get it built into the theater, which will take us about a month to move everything in, line it up. But we're going to do a lot of the footwork during the winter months and early spring, building each of the panels that would go in there. I think we figured out about 8 panels and about 15 feet of flooring around. We'll have the chair done. We'll have some of the consoles done.
So it's going to be a Klingon bridge?
Yeah, it's going to be a Klingon bridge. It's going to be actually, it's going to be like a DS9 type bridge. It's going to be Outpost Battlespears bridge.
Good. Okay. So did either of you check out the latest Big Bang Theory?
the Spock, the Spock trilogy, or the Spock,
Spock, Spockumentary.
Spockumentary, yeah.
Doc, did you?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm not not up to speed with Big Bang.
Okay.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy's son came on the show with Will Wheaton, and they were taping Spock's favorite fans, and Sheldon happened to be one of the ones they chose to do a documentary. You get my meaning.
Spockumentary.
And it was a pretty good show. Y'all watch it, Doc. Yeah. Without giving you too much more of the party line.
Yeah. No, certainly if this is something special for Nimoy or for Spock, let me track this down somehow.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was just that Adam Nimoy apparently wanted on, and so they made him a part where he had a camera and he was just interviewing Spock fans, and of course, Sheldon, he goes off onto his wild tangents, and then he finally decides to propose to Amy Farrah Fowler. I couldn't believe the outcome of that, so I'll leave it at that. That was a...
You're telling him too much.
Yeah, no, that's why...
You're telling him too much.
No, I'm going to leave it...
I cut off.
No, that's called a teaser. Let him see what happens. So you've got to check that out.
I said you're giving too much teasing.
Nah. Okay.
No, I'm just looking at mine. And
you're a Ferengi, not a stripper. For teasing.
Oh, God.
So is this just recently aired? It looks like something aired like this week.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
It aired last night.
Again.
Thursday.
Sure.
I mean Thursday. Thank you.
So, but anyway, I'll leave it at that.
We haven't lost our touch, Lou. We still do stereo.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Let's go into Sins of the Father. Continue on, Doc.
Okay, the synopsis for tonight's show is Worf is plunged headfirst into the politics of the Klingon Empire when his deceased father is accused of treason. This is the 17th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally aired on the 19th of March, 1990. It was written by Ronald D. Moore and W. Reed Moran, based on a story by Drew Dying. Oh, dear. I knew I was going to stumble on that one. Deegan or Deegan, one of those two. It was directed by Les Landau. Guest stars for tonight include Charles Cooper as Kempek, Tony Todd as Kern, Patrick Massett as Duras, and Thelma Lee as Kalest. So, what do we think about this episode? Now, if I go first, which I have to, I think, I've always mentioned that I'm not the biggest fan of Klingons, and this is one of the reasons why we have Brian on, of course. But I actually think this episode is fantastic. I think it's really good. It is probably the greatest episode at establishing backstory in one of the main characters that we've had so far. And it's, I think it's a very, very good episode. And I think the Worf character is, although not necessarily true to say he's changed from this point onward, but I think the way that the viewer looks at him and the relationship he has with the audience is different after this episode. So I'm a very, very big fan.
Mm-hmm.
So shall I hand over to you, Lou, or to Brian first?
Go ahead, Lou.
Okay. I do like this is our first real introduction to the Klingon political system, the honor system, the family system, all of it. This is our first real introduction. I think they did a very good job of it, too. But I'm curious on Brian, when you go to do your first thoughts, he said Kalest, and that was the old lady that Picard seeks out. But so isn't Kalest the mythical Klingon god?
Kalest.
So less, not lest.
Right.
Okay.
The female is worse, if you want to call it nanny.
Ajmak or nurse.
Yeah, basically she was basically a caregiver for the House of Mog. She took care of the children,
right?
While the parents were out doing their duties of the house. Okay. In which case, Dad was out taking care of business for the house.
Okay.
On Kittimer, where this is all going to bring the discussion to. It is a very good introduction into the Klingon Empire and gives you an idea of the, if you want to call it, the honor system of the Klingon Empire. This is one of them that I learned and understood better after Next Gen came along and DS9 came around, and we got to understand more of the Klingon Empire. This is where, yeah, we got to see a look inside the Klingon Empire, but it might come with knowledge after the fact. Ken Peck, you got to give him credit, okay? He was the longest-serving chancellor of the Klingon Empire for a reason. He knew how to play the politics of the Klingon Empire to its fullest extent. But at the same time, it's actually what eventually killed him, is because he played too much politics and not enough honor, because it eventually got him killed, which we will divulge at, because that's later episodes down the line. But you get a sense of the good side of the Klingon honor system and the bad side of the Klingon honor system. And you also get to see the middle of the Klingon honor system. Ken Peck really, really played the outer edges of both sides of the honor system with this episode. And again, you don't understand the full complete knowledge until you've had DS9 interaction with the Klingon Empire to understand this a whole lot better. But yeah, this is a good example of how politics plays in the Klingon Empire. And it's a very, very excellent episode, because it got a chance to see how the council is, how the council works, how the council thinks. And it opens up the Klingon. It's the beginning of the opening of the Klingon Empire, because after this show, you'll see more episodes with the Klingon Empire in Star Trek The Next Generation through the latter part of this season and into the next season, too, as well.
So
it was a great introduction into the Klingon Empire for Star Trek The Next Gen.
Okay. So would you guys agree that this was a very, very interesting look into the honor system, but really this episode is quite dishonorable considering what they actually do in this episode and the way it works out in the end?
Again, it's like I pointed out, it's Ken Peck playing the honor system to its fullest extent. Mm-hmm. You got one who's very dishonorable. You got one that's extremely honorable. And Ken Peck, being the politician that he is, tries to keep the balance of the empire in check and still satisfy both people's needs for their honor. I felt sorry for Worf after that, but I understand why Worf did it. Being that I do play a lot of Klingon Persona and stuff, mm-hmm. I understand what Duras was trying to do, too, at the same time. He was setting himself up to be Chancellor, and he didn't need the blemish on his family's honor to be out there to the public, because if it was, then Duras wouldn't have the backers he had. Mm-hmm. I don't think most of the council knew the whole secret. I think only Ken Peck and Duras knew that. And then Kern, and then Worf and Picard will find out later on. And so were Kern.
But do you agree with what they were saying? Do you agree with what they were saying, that if the truth were known, it would cause a Klingon civil war? I can't imagine.
Yeah, it would have.
Really? Because I was thinking the entire race of Klingons, all believing in honor and loyalty to the Empire. But if they find out that Duras' family is actually dishonorable, that's going to... I mean, wouldn't they just want his head as an honorable thing?
Not all of them would. You got to remember, Klingon loyalty is a very, very tricky subject at best, okay? And I'll use me as an example. I'm very loyal to my allies, but until one of my allies does something to me that I would be like what ICAF did with me. I was very loyal to ICAF for many years, and then when they kicked me out for supposedly causing Shelby's death, I was very distraught, and now I don't even talk with them. I don't even associate with them except under absolute necessity. But Klingons tend to be that kind of way. So I can understand the whole reasoning behind the whole episode and why everything and why Kempek said what he said. It would cause rifts on those people who are not loyal to Dear Ross to strike out at Dear Ross. And Dear Ross had enough political power that no matter what he did, they would still back him no matter what because he's basically politically put everyone behind the eight ball, just about. Mm-hmm. And this is, you'll find out in later episodes when they have the Civil War over the leadership with Gowron and Dear Ross. You'll find out later on that there is a lot more people not happy with the situation and rise up to change it. And that's what Kempek was worried about when he was still chancellor.
Got it. Okay, so
now that I've talked too long, let Doc have a few words.
Actually, I mean, I know that there's always this big issue about Worf being one of the few honorable Klingons, but they always go on about honor and so on. And I've never really seen the contradiction in my mind because I think from, you know, Worf's perspective, he was brought up outside of the Klingon Empire, and he has a very idealized view of the honor in the purest sense. And there are other Klingons that also have that view. And in particular, in this episode, Kern is a very honorable Klingon as well. He is square behind his older brother. He even goes to his older brother so that he can start all of this stuff. And he's willing to die alongside him and all of the rest of it. I think that when you do get up into the upper echelons of power, I think things become a little bit murkier. And I think that they clearly need to become a bit murkier because I think otherwise it's just not realistic. In my mind, I do think that with this information out, it would have led to Klingon Civil War. Of course, we're only a year and a bit away from a Klingon Civil War anyway. Mm. And I think it's just because, even if you've got hard evidence, people, the evidence presented in this episode was tampered with to begin with. So who's to say that the evidence that they're being shown wasn't tampered with? And, there's a lot of, if it's an actual act of dishonor being shown in full view of the public, then maybe they might lose people's backing. But, a murky thing on something 20 years ago that someone says something, someone else says something else, I think it's very easy for people to be blinded by their faith of having served with the Duras family and the Duras tradition, and I think they would happily dismiss it as not being truthful. And so I actually I think that a lot of this makes sense in my mind, and I don't see this contradiction in terms of within an honor-based system there are going to be people that are dishonorable that are going to try to use the system to their advantage. And you have that on Earth with whatever freedoms or whatever philosophies you want to spout, you'll always have people that will slightly abuse them and try to work their way within the systems that these principles are respected. And I don't see any reason why the Klingon High Council wouldn't be similar.
Okay.
Well, that's always been the hard part about being on the High Council anyway. It's a shell game no matter how it's like any other major political system that you deal with. There's always going to be people manipulating it to the point of getting where they want and how they get there and stuff like that. But with the Klingon Empire, it's a little bit easier to hide it. Many novels, like the first one about Kalas, the Emperor Kalas, that came out. It was shortly after his show came out, which was a few episodes more down the line. There was a book come out where they discovered that he isn't actually the true Klingon Kalas, that the blood that was on the dagger that they used to make him was actually his lieutenant. and not Kalis himself. And he's it's basically he's using the honor system to find the spies that are fighting the people who are trying to assassinate Gowron and Kurn throughout this book, and then dealing with all the issues that he was dealing with being emperor now, and now people finding out the truth that he is an emperor. And people were trying to, political sides were trying to hide the fact that someone had found this, and he told everybody, look, let me stand on my own merit. Let me stand on my own honor. And sure enough, the people believed that he was Kalis, even though the proof was there that he wasn't Kalis. His honor was so strong that the people believed it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And with the honor system in the Klingon Empire, it's I always say it, the honor system is based on what you view as the honor of a Klingon. Not just because my view of being a honorable Klingon is not the same as Kors, not the same as Diarrhasis, and not the same as Kempex. And you have to take that into account when you're looking at some of this stuff. Now, obvious things. I would not use assassin. Okay? I'm one of them that'll walk up to you, put the dagger in your chest, and drive it up to your head and let your drop your body down and let it bleed
out. Okay, all right.
But Diarrhasis, on the other hand, will hire 5 or 6 assassins and try to kill you. Okay, is that honorable? In his eyes, yes. In my eyes, no. Big difference. Okay? You have to look at the honor system of a Klingon based on how he was taught what's honorable and what's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But, of course, he was taught by a dishonorable person, so what are you going to get?
Right.
Okay.
Another dishonorable Klingon. But, again, that's dishonorable in my eyes. May not be dishonorable in Kempak's eyes. Does that make any sense?
Well, I think he probably sees it as dishonorable, but for the good of the Empire, he has to overlook it.
Right. And that's what you have to take into account with this episode, is that because we may not agree with what he's doing, he's leading an empire. An empire that he made last for 71 years, I think, under his reign. Okay. He's had to do a lot of under table dealings and look away at some stuff for what's benefit to keep the empire from not going into civil war. You have to admire the man for his political savvy. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Okay.
At all. All
right. Well, we better go on, bud. So the Enterprise gets a new first officer, a Klingon Kurn, and I was thinking, I wonder what would happen if Kirk was forced to take on a Klingon exchange officer.
I think it was kind of fun because I actually used that as the basis to create the USS Gorkon, my first Star Trek club when I was commanding officer. I used that exchange program as a reason to create the USS Gorkon when I had my first crew, because it was a mix of Federation and Klingons. So I thought it was pretty interesting to have a Klingon exchange program, personally.
And it's good that it's a callback, right, to, you know, the episode last year when Riker went over and was the exchange officer on the Pah. So it's a good callback to that, you know, particular storyline. And, I mean, even at the beginning, I see this episode very much in kind of two halves, where it says, you know, maybe there's a fifth of it or a quarter of it at the beginning that seems to be going in a different direction with Kurn coming aboard. And, you know, he ends up talking to Riker and they have a bit of a chat and you have a bit of, you know, light comedy with the food and whatnot. And I think it's good that they didn't need to integrate that storyline into the storyline of, you know, Worf has to go back to the fight for his family's honor. And I think it's good that they took the opportunity just to call back onto season 2 and to bring in, you know, more cultural observations with Riker and with, you know, with the burnt chicken meat and that kind of stuff. I thought it was fun.
Okay. All right, but Riker has to yield his position. Now, does that mean that Riker is now under his command?
Yep. basically, that's what that whole exchange meant, was that, yep, Riker is basically sitting back doing nothing for the most part.
Good thing he didn't get killed, though.
Well, yeah, Kern did make that point, and he's right. Riker should have known better, being on a Klingon ship.
Right.
That you don't...
You don't offer
that
suggestions.
That you don't... yeah.
Two observations about Kern's introduction to the bridge crew I thought was funny. He immediately digs into the crew about how he intends to instill a sense of discipline that they may not be accustomed to. That is, of course, with your permission, Captain. Now, did you guys pick up on Picard's eyes when he rolled? Oh, of course, Commander. I thought it was funny when Picard rolled his eyes.
Well, he knew what was coming.
Yeah, this is going to be
Picard's
fun.
Picard is a scholar on Klingon, so it didn't surprise me when he rolled his eyes and he giving everyone the ride of their life. Basically, that's what happened.
The only other observation that I noticed at the time was Wesley and Data. I can't believe that they would actually sit there and talk to each other while Kern was talking. So,
well, they're used to doing that with Federation people. On Klingon ship, you normally don't see that going on when the CO and the XO are on the bridge of the ship.
So, yeah, we're lucky.
So, yeah.
You know, Data's lucky he didn't get demoted. And Wesley's lucky he didn't get killed, darn it. Oh, well. We're all sad about that part.
Kern wouldn't have killed him.
Yeah.
Kern knew the Federation regulations quite well.
Yeah, I guess so. But why not actually let Wesley go to a Klingon ship? See what happens. Okay, so take us to the Outer Commentary Cloud, Commander. I feel sorry for Kern, actually, if you think about it. He's got to come onto this cruise ship, sit on a cushioned chair, no battles, no glory, nothing to go to Stovico for. So, ugh. Poor guy.
Well, not really. I mean, you got to think how well Worf is done on his ship. I mean,
yes, and
there's honor to be
well they're
begotten. I mean,
yeah, but that's gonna be called into question during the dinner, you know. Yeah, he sure likes it on this princess cruise. I am a Klingon. Oh yeah. that gets picked up. But anyway, yeah, I do like the Klingon glory in the political system. But one thing I thought was weird is how the crew's all whining about the way Kern runs the ship. I think, actually, if you think about it, I think they were all wrong. They are on a military ship, so it may be a ship of exploration, but it's still a military-style ship. So all these surprise inspections, they should have been prepared for that.
I mean,
I think... Go ahead, Doc.
Sorry. I think, Lou, you've got a point there, and I think that... there's too much hard whining far too early.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like they haven't even had 2 hours worth of Kern, and already, you know, Geordi's whining. I mean, he's tracking down Riker specifically to whine, and mm-hmm. and you know, Wesley's there. And I don't think Wesley should be talking to Data when anyone else is talking on the bridge. It's rude, even on a human ship, let alone a Klingon ship. Mm. So I think that they have... this thing moves very fast at the beginning, right? And I think... when you watch the episode, one of the reasons why they have this whining is it's not really there because Wesley or Geordi want to whine. It's there so that Wesley and Geordi get to say that, you know, Kern's been very nice to Worf. And that's where we cut to.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason why you have this is that they're trying to move on the momentum on the story to make sure you notice there's this kind of strange relationship between those two.
Right.
But he wasn't actually he was being worse on Worf than he was on the rest of them.
Exactly.
That's what's so bad about it.
Yes, that's what I was thinking about.
Worf wasn't bitching about it because Worf is a Klingon. He even though he might not like what Kern's telling him to do, he does it because he's a Klingon warrior and that's what they do. Okay. Then if he wants to bitch about it, he'll go in. If he's tired of the stupid stuff, he'll just walk up to the ex, to that officer, and either do one of the two things: get his ass beat or killed, or get or beat the butt out, beat the snot out of him, and tell him, "Look, back off." I mean, that's the Klingon way. I mean, that's sorry, guys. I mean, on a Federation ship, you bitch up to the chain of command. On a Klingon ship, you kick the butt of the person doing it to you. Huh? Tell them to back off of you or get your butt beat either way.
Right. Tell me, Mr. Worf, what about that cloud? Thank you. You handled that so well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was treating Worf a whole lot worse than he was treating the guys who was actually complaining and moaning. And looks like, and like you say, Worf wanted to deck him. But,
is there something to say?
Oh, heck no. No, no. I'm fine. Thank you.
I know. I wanted Worf to jump over that rail and pounce on Kurt so bad. Because I was even getting sick and tired of Kurt jumping on Worf's butt. I'm sorry. If it had been me sitting at that other end, I would have stunned Kurt and beat that snot out of his ass.
See, another thing I noticed when Kern and Riker are in the turbo lift, when they walk out, Kern's actually got to duck his head. He was quite tall. Have you met Tony Todd in person, Brian?
Yeah, I have. He was at Starbase Indy a couple of years ago.
Okay, so he's quite tall, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Oh, what's even worse is, if you go back and look at the episode, he's wearing a Death Stinger Disruptor. He's wearing that big old 3 foot long disruptor.
Yeah, right.
He's not wearing that beak nose one that you usually would see in most of the shows. He's wearing the Death Stinger Disruptor. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a small rifle, okay? And because I've got one right now, I'm tapping through the main barrel to reattach for somebody, and I've seen one of them things, and no joke, they're about 3 foot long.
Yeah,
right. And it's like he's wearing this on a holster on his leg. Mm-hmm. And it's just surreal to see one of them on an episode because you're so used to seeing the one from the Star Trek series, from the movie series where they had that little round ball with the tip on the
yeah,
end,
right.
And then the beak nose, you saw a lot of in DS9. But Kern's wearing this Death Stinger, and it's like, oh my god, that thing must weigh 10 pounds on his hip.
Yes, on his y'all, Brian knows Klingon weapons. So here, Mr. Klingon, try some caviar.
Yeah, oh, Kern played that. Tony Todd played that scene so well. It was so beautiful. And he dug into Michael Dorn's character's heels so bad. I was waiting for Worf to jump over the table and beat the snot out of him too there. And it took a lot to keep him from doing that too. That's what made it so fun to watch.
And I find it hard to believe that Kern's never killed anyone at the supper table.
Oh, you'll find that a lot. You don't see a lot of Klingon. There's very few places that I say are sacred to the Klingons.
Uh-huh.
The dinner table happens to be one of them.
Ah.
You very rarely will see anyone try to kill somebody at the supper table, because that's usually the one place that if you got a problem, you'll settle it. Now, will you see a fight at the dinner table? Oh, hell yeah. But you'll never see someone get killed at the dinner table. Very, very, unless someone just stupidly wants to die and have everyone blast him into oblivion. Mm. Because Klingons take their weapons to the dinner table, guys. I hate to tell you this. And in fact, when I go to what they call Good Day to Dine, it's when the Klingons get together and go to a restaurant.
Mm.
We all have our disruptors, and we all have to put them on the table to show that we are not... That we are being honorable, so we all have to put our weapons on the table when we go to a Good Day to Die event.
Okay,
so yeah, I understand that.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, real quick. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
No, I was just going to say, just very flippantly and quickly. I mean, if the dinner table is a sacred place where you can't be killed, is that why Kempek has managed to survive so long? He's been hanging around the buffet.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly
that's
right.
Why he's got. That's why he's so fat.
Yeah, that I got notes on the fat Klingon, but okay. So now let me ask you, Brian. Tangent here. When you actually go out into public and go to a restaurant dressed as a Klingon with the disruptor, do you ever have any problems with people like you can't bring weapons in here, or you know the police going, no. What the hell is that? Or
well, keep in mind too, I do take into account where I'm going before I put on a weapon. Like at the grill, I actually was in a Federation uniform, but I had my phaser with me, and I, as a show of respect, because I had my sash on me, I was still wearing my Klingon honors, even though I was in a Fedi uniform. I did put my phaser on the table. Okay. And people were looking around going, wow, is that a phaser or something like that? When we went to this Irish pub, there was 20 Klingons, and we all put our weapons on the table, all of them.
That's funny. Okay.
Okay. And the restaurant, like, wow, you guys actually brought weapons in here? And I said, yeah, they're props. They're not going to hurt nobody. Well, at least you're nice enough to put them. They were actually happy that we actually put them on the table so people could see them. So they could actually see them. So, yeah, it just depends on what restaurant we're going to. And, like, we went, the last one was Halloween night. None of us brought weapons because we knew that the restaurant had a no-weapons policy. Okay, it'd be like if we went to Waffle House, for an example. A guardsman was kicked out of the restaurant because he had his sidearm on him while he was on guard. A guardsman?
Oh, really?
National guardsman. There's no weapons policy at Waffle House. You can't bring no weapons in at Waffle House. And he was on duty.
Oh, no.
And he had his sidearm on him. He went in the restaurant to go eat with the rest of his people, and they kicked him out because he didn't leave his sidearm in the vehicle.
No. Mm-mm.
So the restaurant we go to, we always check the weapons policy because a lot of them will state no weapons. So we do not bring weapons when we know it's a no weapons policy.
And they also type deal. And they also exclude replicas of non-functioning props.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Okay, I could see not bringing a disruptor into the school, but come on. Okay.
Well, it's like the movie theaters. Ever since that Batman incident in Colorado, God. Where the guy dressed up in whatever gear it was and brought a live weapon into the thing. Even the movie theaters, when we did the last movie premiere, I actually had to lock all the weapons that I had brought to the movie theater in a locked room for exhibition only. I couldn't carry the Batleth around or carry my disruptor around.
Incredible. Incredible.
Because they had, just like we just had a talk about Star Wars, coming up in December. Because they asked me if we were bringing Star Wars people in, and they gave me the policy. We can wear the mask in the lobby, the helmets, mm-hmm. like Darth Vader's helmet, Stormtrooper helmets, the Mandalorian armor helmets. We can wear them in the lobby and outside, but when we go into the movie theater itself, we have to take them off. Okay. Which I very liberal, because AMC won't even let you have a weapon or a helmet even get into the lobby.
Okay.
So Goodrich Theaters is being very flexible considering.
Okay. So, okay, let's go on. Kimpak. Do you like him better or Bug Eyes? I mean, Gowron.
Kimpak. I like Gowron because he's bold.
Yes.
He's stupid, but he's bold. I like Kimpak because he's a politician. He's the ultimate Klingon politician. Like I said, he's the longest standing chancellor in the Klingon Empire. He didn't get there because he was the greatest warrior of all time. He got there because he was the most shrewdest warrior of all time.
If I remember correctly, Kimpak and Picard had an exchange, something to the extent of Picard said something like, I don't know, if I was to say, you look good today, Kim Puck, and he says, that's human, I'll excuse it. And I don't remember what that was or what the exchange was, but I thought, what would Kim Puck do? Do you think he'd try and fight Picard? Your modesty is human, Captain, I will excuse it. Or something like that. But I don't remember.
Well, he was doing that more in jest. Mm-hmm. Than actually he was being Klingon, but was jesting about being a Klingon. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is today a good day to die? I personally would rather not.
Don't matter to me. Klingons don't care when they die. They know they're going to die someday. That's why you love Klingons.
Yeah. So here we go. Let's go ahead. I was thinking I list the dishonors in this episode so far here. Like the first one, Kim Puck tries to get Worf to forget the challenge. If you leave now, this never happened. Second, Duras tries to murder Kern, or have him killed.
No, the first dishonor was the fact that this even came about, right? That Duras's dad had, well, Duras himself had arranged to have Worf's dad implicated in the first place.
Yeah.
So the first one was Duras's doing this in the first place.
Actually, I think we've jumped ahead. Should we just quickly say that, you know, it transpires that Kern is on board the Enterprise to deliver some news to Worf, mm-hmm. And it's twofold. One is that he's his long-lost younger brother that managed to survive because he was being kept with a family friend while the rest of the family got cured at Kittimer. And then the other one is that the High Council has decided to press the blame on the incident at Kittimer onto Worf's father.
Yep.
Right.
Well, the other part is Kern was on the ship to see if his brother had enough Klingon spirit in him to actually consider him to actually do the challenge in the first place. That's what he was there for.
Yeah.
Because I think if Kern didn't think Worf was Klingon enough to do the challenge, I think he would have done the challenge instead.
And of course, they decide to blame Moog.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, they decide to blame Moog because obviously they never thought Worf would ever challenge.
Right, and Danny was there too, anyway.
Okay. But Sherlock LaForge figures out that the logs in the Kittimer massacre were forged.
Well, it helped to have a ship nearby that was actually in the area, near the area where it all happened.
Right.
So that kind of helped figure out the, that also kind of, the records also showed some of that too.
Yeah. So, so Kern ends up getting attacked by three guys while Duras, hides in the trees or something. I don't know. But it doesn't work out, and Kern is being taken care of by Dr. Crusher, and amazingly enough, he survives. She doesn't kill him. So there's one for Dr. Crusher this week.
Well, I mean, it is explicitly mentioned that he has very, you know, amazing recuperative abilities.
Thank God, because he never would have made it otherwise. So, now we enter Captain Chatiche Picard at your service. And at first I was thinking, there's no way Picard would ever have survived the ambush that Kern put out. But apparently, you know, he did. He had one too. They tried to kill him. Except for the, you know, the old ladies who's long time dead. She comes out and saves Picard's life and decides to go with him. That's pretty nice, but did you guys laugh at when she was describing Kim Puck? Kalis caught his eye, but he was too fat. And I thought, you know, there was a moment they missed when she was telling Picard, you know, he was too fat. Picard should have said, he still is.
Or you should see him now. Yeah. And that's why she managed to agree to come along.
Yeah, he's fatter. He's much fatter. But then why is she telling us that he's fat? She's not exactly a beauty queen, you know.
Well, I mean, she is quite old now, but I assume that, it was only 20 years ago, right? Or maybe maybe longer than that. Maybe she was quite nice.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. Beauty is internal and in the eye of the beholder.
Yes.
Don't judge an old lady because, she can sort out fully grown Klingons. So you have to be careful.
Mm. And I wasn't sure, did she toss that knife or did she actually stab him up close and personal?
No, I thought that she tossed the knife. I thought that she threw it.
That's what it looked like.
Because that's pretty hard to do.
Oh yeah,
from that far back into the kind of armor isn't the right word, but the kind of clothing the Klingons would wear.
Mm. So, do you think the Klingons are all lovers of dry ice?
I mean, because of all of the fog.
Yeah, there has to be something there. Go ahead.
So I think we've mentioned before that the aesthetic of the Klingon homeworld and also the Klingon ships is that you probably shouldn't put anything down on the side because it would get very dusty very quickly. So, you leave your glasses on the table and you'll come back to them and you wouldn't be able to see through them.
It's always smoky on Kronos. Or, what is it, the Klingon Imperial Empire. The first city of the Klingon Imperial Empire. Talk about redundancies. But it wasn't Kronos. Kronos comes later.
Sorry, I just got back.
Go ahead. We were talking about all the dry ice around on the Klingon homeworld.
Go to the Feringador sometime.
Well, that's rain.
Need I say any more? Need I say any more? I've never seen so much fog and rain. And I thought London was bad, but Feringador takes London by storm. I mean, come on, get real.
Is that true, Doc? Is it always foggy there?
Well, actually, last week was particularly foggy, and it even closed the airport for a couple of hours in the morning. But despite that evidence, I'm going to say no. It's not that foggy.
So here we go. Now,
please.
Now, this is the first time we see, the Klingon homeworld, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the kind of, this is the first episode that really kind of gives us the architecture and the high command and all of that stuff. And I think it does a very good job at kind of building that world. I think that, I didn't think any of this looked poor or looked, cheap. And the look, unless I'm mistaken, I'm sure there are subtle changes, but I get the feeling that the predominant look of Kronos remains intact throughout, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they revise it that much. So I think it goes to show that they did a very good job on this show.
Mm-hmm. So Picard brings...
But we keep in mind, we have no reference to what Kronos actually looked like because this is actually the first time we've actually came close enough to see what Kronos looks like because the closest we've ever seen to any Klingon structure was Star Trek Undiscovered Country, and that's when we got to see the what few pictures we could of Praxis, and we got to see the prison Rorapenthe.
Yeah.
And then we got to see Kittimer. Also, we got to actually see three different scenarios of what Klingon culture and Klingon buildings and stuff would look like. So this is a first view, a true view of what the Klingon homeworld would look like or what the Klingon Klingon structures would actually look like. So, yeah, I think they did a great job of rendering it to make it look very good. The artist who did that did a great job of it.
Okay. So Picard brings Kalos back to the console. And immediately, Kempek says, "You can go."
To who did she say that?
No, Kempek. He says, "You can go." Actually, he just dismissed her immediately.
Kalis didn't have to say a word. As soon as she appeared, you know, Kempek knows it's the jig is up. She's an eyewitness to it, so the house of cards are about to fall. We really don't want her to say a word.
No, absolutely. It's that, you know, it becomes very clear that they're not prepared to have, you know, anything discussed in like open council. And I don't know if there's any kind of killer blow that Kalis has that can be delivered and will change things, but there's no connection. No one's taken any risk of that.
No. No. Okay, and of course, she before she leaves, he says, "You know, you look good, Kalis. You are still fat." Oh God, that bitch! I mean, what's the point of that? She's talking to her chancellor and saying he's still too fat.
He doesn't like it. You can see the change in his face. It's like, oh, I thought I was in there.
Mm. Yeah, oh, well. Well, what do we think of the compromise? Allow Worf to leave with his tail tucked between his legs. Allow Kern to continue his life under the lie. And Worf accepts this accommodation. So they were supposed to answer for the charges. And if they weren't successful, they were supposed to die. But at the very end, Worf decides, I will accept discommendation. To me, I think that's a bad idea. I don't think Duras would want that. Because like Picard tells Kern, you know, somebody's going to need to fix this. And he needs you alive with your honor intact. If I was Duras, I would have said, hell no. They need to die. This can't come up again.
No, because... Okay, look at it from the perspective of the outsider looking in for a moment. Okay? Worf accepting this accommodation is basically saying he's guilty. Okay? But instead of getting a life... He's getting a life sentence of, I'm not a Klingon in the Empire anymore, instead of a death sentence. He's getting life without parole, basically, is what he's doing. And in exchange... Duras is keeping his mouth shut about Kern and his knowledge of Kern's family line. Mm-hmm. And Duras is getting what he wants, which is no blemish on his record. It keeps the Empire in check. And that is why Worf did what he did. Worf did what he did to keep the Empire in check because he knew Kempek was keeping it in check. He didn't like the way Kempek was doing it, but he at least didn't have the Empire in a civil war, which would have brought the Federation into possible conflict with the Klingon Empire, because you know everybody, they tried to drag the Federation into everything. Okay? It kept the Empire in check. It fulfilled Duras' need to prove that Worf's father was the one that did what he did at Kittimer. And it kept Kern safe. Duras isn't going to do anything to upset that apple cart, because if he starts going after Kern, they're going to find out eventually that Kern was the son of Mog. Why wasn't he discommodated back at the council? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was kind of a counter check to Duras keeping Duras from killing Kern, but satisfying Duras's need to not have his family honor charnished.
Mm-hmm.
And Worf going back to the Federation, it's not going to affect him that much unless they have interactions with Klingons. And as you find out in later episodes, some of the Klingons didn't believe Duras's BS story either. Gowron being a good example of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So over, but what I like what happened after the fact, he basically got his revenge by slapping Duras and calling him what he truly is.
Right.
A son of a coward.
Traitor.
And yeah, son of a traitor. So basically the people in that room knew it. And see, what was really good about that is because Picard knew it, Duras just couldn't pull a hat trick out and kill off Kempek quickly and kill off Kern or kill off everyone else, because Picard would have opened his mouth the minute he found something.
Mm.
See what I'm saying? And in fact, I'm surprised he didn't use that card when Gowron becomes chancellor later on. But in a sense, you'll find out that discommodation isn't always a life sentence. There are ways of working around that problem.
Yeah.
And Worf knew that. And Worf knew that too when he took the discommodation.
That's true. That could be. That's true. So now that Worf is dishonored, does that mean he can't go to Stovokor? Or do you think, obviously, there has to be some kind of a deity that runs Stovokor who knows that Worf is actually honorable but took this dishonor for the good of the Empire? Does that mean Worf would still be accepted into Stovokor?
I think Worf would have been accepted into Stovokor if he would have died any time after that episode.
Okay.
Though the Empire would have looked at him as a traitor.
Right.
Yeah, I think he would have been allowed into Stovokor because the truth would have been known in Stovokor. It's like going to the pearly gates and being judged whether you're worthy to enter or not.
I suppose.
Okay. It's same basic principle, Lou.
Okay. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I was watching the episode for this review and I was taking notes, I actually laughed out loud when Picard said to Kern, "Do not forget what he does here today. Do not let your children forget." Now, why do you think I laughed out loud for that?
Well, because you already knew what was going to be the end game. But at the time, it may not have been Kern that could have fixed this. It may have been the children of Worf or Kern who would actually be back here fixing the problem that has happened.
Right.
Of Worf's discommodation.
But, of course, we all know later Kern not only forgets, he forgets big time. So what do you think of the...
No, Kern...
Go ahead.
Kern actually was smart. He walked out of this council meeting, and you know what he went out and did? Got 8 squadrons to back his ass up for a Klingon takeover.
Yeah.
No, Kern walked out of this and said, "I'm going to make sure that I'm going to avenge my brother because Peck's going to die sometime here soon." Uh-huh. Okay, when he does, I'm going to take over, be the new Klingon chancellor. And the first thing I'm going to do is reinstate Worf, my brother.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing.
That's what Kern's thought.
Unless I'm wrong, I don't think there was ever a storyline where Kern was trying for chancellor or even thought about trying for chancellor.
Yeah, he did.
Kern.
Yeah. Watch, spoiler alert, hint. Watch what happens after Dear Ross dies and they have the Klingon Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Kern had 8 squadrons behind him to take the challenge Gowron for leadership.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's right, but didn't Worf stop it?
Worf made him, actually 6 of the 8 squadrons came to back Gowron on his challenge.
Okay.
But Kurt had 8 squadrons, and he was already considering taking on Gowron and Dear Ross for leadership of the High Council.
Right. Because later, you know, Kern says, like, when Worf wants to get rid of Dear Ross, "You're the one that told me to not go against Gowron." Something like that. What do you think of the discommendation ceremony?
Well, I'll tell you, as a cosplayer, you do that to a Klingon, you will definitely be remembered.
Because
I have done it. I have discommodated someone before, and trust me, it's not a pretty sight when they realize what you've just done to them.
Yeah. Is that's kind of interesting to get turn around. I thought it was pretty impressive.
Well, I always laugh at this because you're going to turn your back on somebody you know is dishonorable, and you're going to turn around, cross your arms, and turn your back on them. Mm-hmm. What's to stop them from not having a weapon and killing you and taking the chancellorship right there on the spot? I mean, come on, get real here.
Well, they're discommodated now. They couldn't become chancellor or anything. But you're right. He could still pull out a disruptor and take a few of them out before they could stop him.
If you kill the chancellor, you have right there on the spot have earned the right to lead the Empire, whether you're discommodated or not.
Really? I'm surprised.
Yeah, really.
I'm surprised Duros doesn't just do it then, if it's that easy.
Well, the problem with the reason why Duros didn't do it was because politically, if he had done that, politically it would have been a disfall for him because he was politically trying to get the chancellorship. See what I was saying? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but...
Okay. To go and bluntly challenge the chancellor like that would have pulled political enemies against him right and left. He wasn't politically set to be the chancellor. That's what he was working on at that time. He was almost there, but wasn't quite there yet. By the time Kempek died, he was politically set to take over the leadership of the Empire.
Yeah.
He had enough backing. He had enough backing that nobody would question him if he killed Galron. Okay,
yeah.
Like win the vote, get the Arbiter to make him chancellor, then kill off Galron somewhere out in space, or excommunicate him out in airlock. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And nobody would question it.
Okay.
All right, then. Is there anything else you guys got to bring up? I'm at the end of my notes.
Well, I thought the battle at Kaelas's house was interesting to see Picard take on two assassins.
Yeah.
And almost and did a better job at fighting them than what Kurd did the other way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kurd got his butt. Kurd, no offense, Kurd should have kicked both of their butts. But he got his head handed to him on a silver platter. At least Picard killed one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt didn't. See what I'm saying? That's what I thought was so funny about this whole episode. Worf did a better job of fighting than what Kurt did, and Kurt was the better should have been the better fighter.
Yeah, Picard. You're right. Okay. Well, then, I guess that brings us to the end then, right?
Yep. I hope, Doc, I kind of opened up your mind to what the Klingon Empire is.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so that brings us to our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being terrible and 5 being Ben's rating. So on a 1 to Ben. For me, this is, again, a very insightful into the ways of the Klingon Empire, the ways of honor. However, the episode is really dishonorable. Thank you, Michael Dorn, and the writers of Star Trek for giving us one of the most unique species ever told in Star Trek history. These aren't your dad's Klingons, guys. These ain't Kirk's Klingons. These are a whole proud and noble race. And, Doc, you know, I'm surprised, because I like it when Klingons come to visit. It's going to be interesting. It shows that every society is flawed, real flawed sometimes. No matter how honorable they think they are, there's going to be lies and political games to be played. I don't know if I've ever used this on here, but the true definition of politics is very simple. Poly in Latin means many. And what are ticks? Blood-sucking creatures. So, politics, many blood-sucking creatures. Klingon society is no different than any other body of government here on Earth. Maybe the exception of Queen Liz. But I look at the Klingon honor system, you know, I like this look at the Klingon honor system, and it won't be the last time we come across it. I especially like the song and dance future Klingons must do whenever they encounter Worf now. So anytime you see a Klingon come aboard the ship or they come across Worf, now there's a whole thing that they have to go through for that dishonorable jerk over there. Especially when a certain young lady comes aboard. And we all know her, and we all love her. So I'm looking forward to when she comes on board. And I believe, Brian, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that's when you will be back. I don't have you on anything except for season 4. Well, hold on. I might be wrong. When is the next Klingon episode?
that will be when Gowron and Diros come. Kempek dies, and
yes,
and Picard's made the arbiter of secession, and our favorite Susie Paxton comes on with Alexander.
Right, that's the one. So there's. So
does this mean that Brian comes on for all the Alexander episodes? Is that the deal we're getting into?
Yeah, Brian, you want the all Alexander episodes too?
Depends on my schedule.
I'm trying to remember the name of that episode. Can anyone help me there?
Reunion.
The what?
Reunion.
Reunion. Okay, yep, that's going to be season 4, episode 17.
It's not 17. It's not 17.
Oh, no, 7. Like 7. Sorry, I meant 7. So, even though I said this entire episode was dishonorable, that doesn't mean it deserves a dishonorable score. So for me, I'm going to give this one a 4. I kind of think it might be a low 4, perhaps a 3.85, but still, I'm going to give Sins of the Father a 4. So before we go to the doctor, Brian, what about you? What do you think?
Me, it was a great introduction into the Klingon Empire. The interaction between Kern and Worf to get Worf mad enough at him to confront him was par excellent for Tony Todd and Michael Dorn. Both of them played that very, very well. And I like the fact you got to see the first part of the politics of the Klingon Empire. Sorry, Lou, I disagree. It's not a 4. It's a big old 5 for me. It was an excellent opening line for the Klingon Empire. We couldn't ask for a better look into the Klingon Empire than that episode.
Oh, a big old 5. Okay. Doc, what about you?
Okay. I mean, as I mentioned, and as I always mention, I'm not the biggest fan of the Klingons. But I really, really like this episode. I think this episode is great at what it does. And I think it does a couple of things. I think it builds the culture, and it builds the background to the Klingons that we know and we're going to keep for the next however many long, you know, 10 years or whatever. It also puts in motion the kind of the Sons of Mog storyline in terms of, you know, what's going to happen with them, how they're going to obviously have to overturn this going forward. And I think that's good that they do get this through storyline and proper character development on, you know, on the Worf side. I also think that in isolation, the backstory of Worf is also great. I think that, you know, up until now, we don't know why Worf is where he is and why he's doing what he does. But you see very clearly in this episode that, you know what drives him. And it's clear that he's kind of come from this kind of very idealized view of what the Empire should be. And it's a bit of a rude awakening when he's dealing with Kempek, and he's basically telling him to, you know, go away, and you shouldn't really be too concerned about these things. I think that I mentioned right at the beginning, I think that the kind of character we know Worf to be after this episode is different to the character that we thought he was going into this episode. And I think that that's all for the better. I think this is a significant kind of game changer for Worf that does, you know, that does carry through into more storylines. I have to say that, I think that the supporting cast in this episode are also very good. I do like Kempek, and I also like Tony Todd coming in as Kern. Obviously, they're going to be back. I think almost everyone in this episode is back in later episodes too. I like there was something that I didn't manage to mention, but there's a scene when Worf is called a traitor in Council by Duras, and he gets hit across the face, and Worf reciprocates that right at the end when he, you know, acknowledges he's going to be discommendated, but he gives Duras a whack in any case. Mm-hmm. I think that this is overall kind of fantastic, and I see no reason not to give this a full 5 out of 5.
Mm.
So I think it's definitely thumbs up from me. And it's very good that we have this such deep character development that then actually fundamentally stays with the character going forward. And although I'm a big Data guy, I kind of acknowledge that when you have development for Data, like when he gets married, not married, but when he gets in his girlfriend for a little while, or when you find out that he's not alone and Laura's around, it very much disappears after an episode or two. Whereas this thing kind of, this focuses Worf's character for the next 10 years. And as such, I don't think I can give it anything less than a 5.
Okay, 5 it is. All right then. Brian, thank you for coming on. And so I guess we will see you, as it is now, somewhere around March. However, Brian and I have been talking that I think it's time to pull the Lou Trek Show out of mothballs. And so we're probably thinking about getting the holidays over so we can devote a little time to it. We're not going to do a weekly show. It won't be a weekly show. But it will be better than
the... Bi-weekly or monthly probably is what it'll be, because we went through how many topics did we go through before we finally had this to shut it down, because we just couldn't talk about anything else more going on too as well. That was the other part.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot you could do.
Right.
So we had 213 shows.
I think what we're going to do is, I've been holding this thing for when me and Doc were going to sit down and have another person on to talk about the AI issue that's going on and how it affects in the Star Trek universe, what's going on now. Mm-hmm. I think we'll probably open up with that show, if that's all right with you, Doc.
Yep, absolutely, sure.
You bet.
And we'll just this will be one of the few times Lou will actually get to sit down and do nothing but sit and listen to two intellectuals chit-chat about something that, which is a good subject if you think about it, because how data is now and what we're looking at down the line of AIs, either as in sci-fi in general, and what we're looking at now in our actually being able to do in our world too. It's a very interesting topic to start out the Lou Trek Show with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And besides that, it honors. We're starting off our show honoring our fallen android,
mm-hmm.
Brian Baker.
I've already changed the opening intro for the Lou Trek Show a little bit. We're going to continue to use Brian's voice on the intro. But it's, you know, it comes with the preface that says you may not be here in person, but you will always be here in spirit. So he'll always have his voice on every Lou Trek show. But it's been February of 2014 since we posted one with him and I. So it will be 2 years about the time we restart this timing. I think it's just going to be when Brian or I come up with an idea, we say, hey, I've got a topic. Let's talk about it. That's when we'll put it out. Sometimes I like to do, I just think of a Star Trek episode I want to do a commentary on, and I just pop on and do it. And sometimes we like to do a commentary on an episode that we just pop on and do it.
Here's another one. You realize that Simon Gregg is actually writing a lot of this newest script on this new Star Trek movie?
No. I don't know. Who's he?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Doc, please educate this man.
Simon Gregg?
Yes. So Scotty!
That's Simon Pegg.
Scotty! Oh, Pegg. Sorry. Okay, shoot me. Yeah, Simon's doing a lot of the writing on this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know if you'd realize that, Lou.
No, I didn't. I still didn't know that.
Yeah. There's a subject matter that's very open. I mean, he came out when they first talked about having this new movie, the third one coming out, that he wanted to write it more in what Star Trek was, the original series Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So he made it clear that he was going to do a lot of the script writing for this newest movie.
Okay. Maybe when we do a news on the new movie, we need to bring on Colin.
We could.
Yep. Yeah, Colin's got his ear inside these things. Okay. Well then, thanks for coming on again, Brian. So,
next time on Star Trek: The Next Generation, Captain Picard is secretly kidnapped and replaced by an alien imposter.
That's not the captain I know.
while the real captain is trapped with savage prisoners.
We are not the enemy.
The imposter is leading the ship into disaster.
You are endangering this ship for no reason.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Everyone, join us next week as we review Season 3, Episode 18, Allegiance. And we're going to have Mark Stamper on for that. So, Mark, get ready. We're coming at you. So, everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Ah,
I've missed that song.